Welcome to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs Podcast. My name is Fergal Byrne. Every week, I talk to inspiring social entrepreneurs and changemakers dedicated to building a better world. Here, they tell their stories, the highs and the lows, and share what they have learned to help other social entrepreneurs and changemakers on their journey.
Funders like to fund things that are successful, and that's because someone else has taken the risk out. It's easier for them to come on board. So when you're starting out, it's a very, very rough environment, because if nobody knows who you are, you have to work blood, sweat, and tears to get in front of these individuals. Echoing Green is the ultimate social entrepreneur organization. They say they fund people, not ideas. They mean it. They support you in all levels, from financing to support, in all levels from legal to business. Anything you would like that a social entrepreneur needs, you contact them. If they don't have the answers, they know someone who has an answer, and they will make that introduction.
I'm very pleased today to introduce Chris Adegeka. Chris is an engineer, inventor, and founder and CEO of Rides for Lives. Motivated by his experiences growing up in rural Uganda, Chris started Rides for Lives in 2011 to connect individuals and communities in rural Uganda to critical health and education services by means of locally made transport vehicles such as wheelchairs, bicycles, and bicycle ambulances. Chris has received many awards for his work at Rides for Lives. He's one of the Forbes 30 Under 30 and an Echoing Green and Ashoka Fellow. Well, thank you very much, Chris, for taking the time to speak to Inspiring Social Entrepreneurs. I'm looking forward to hearing your story and your insights on your journey. It's a great idea, Rides for Lives. I'm just wondering maybe if you could tell us a little bit about what exactly you do and where the idea came from.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Frog. I really appreciate it. My company, Rides for Lives, is a social enterprise that makes innovative vehicles to bring access to healthcare in rural areas where none exist. So essentially what that means is, if you look at the big populations in developing countries, the majority of the individuals live in rural areas. And when you look at the infrastructure in terms of schools and health centers and all the other essential needs, they are primarily based in cities and towns. So for us, we decided to focus on healthcare simply because you find a woman needs to give birth and she has to go, 10, 15 miles to get the hospital and reach there and be met with the doctor is not around, come back tomorrow. So with those kind of lack of healthcare access issues, that's when I decided to start Rides for Lives to solve the problem. Answering your question of where did the idea come from, I was born and raised in Uganda. And I was affected both directly and indirectly by lack of access to healthcare, including losing both my parents. And when my parents died, at that point, I was like a young child. I didn't really know or have much I can do other than just sit down and be sad and cry. But through so many life events, I was able to end up in California and finish an engineering degree and a couple more engineering degrees. And so my experiences combined with my technical background, plus, the tragedies that have affected me personally combined, kind of got me into the healthcare space.
Right. Wow. Wow. And how did you end up in California, Chris?
I'm glad you asked. Grab a seat. No, it's a really, really long life journey. It's like a roller coaster. I can tell you for sure that it's going to take you a couple minutes to find someone as lucky as myself. I've been very, very lucky. And there are so many life events that had to happen very precisely at the right time for me to turn out the way I did. So basically, I lost my parents, like I mentioned earlier, and I was a little orphan growing up with all kinds of poverty-related issues, from hunger and homelessness and famine, hard labor, just name it, everything, I've been part of it. But when I was about 15, I was informed about an orphanage in a small town called Fort Portal, which is about 5 hours from Kampala, the capital of Uganda, where I'm from. And I went over there and asked if they could help me, because I had this passion for going to school, but I never really had the resources because you have to pay school fees and all the scholastic needs. But luckily, the lady who runs the orphanage, her name is Kara Adams, and it's called Yes Uganda, it's Youth Encouragement Services, admitted me, and then they started supporting me. I went to school in Uganda, and eventually through that same program, I got connected to a sponsor family in California. And the sponsor family kept paying for me while I stayed with extended family or different places in Uganda. And we developed a relationship. And over time, when I finished my high school, I did really well. They offered to bring me over to California to go to school. And boom, my life literally turned upside down and changed.
Wow. Wow. It sounds, as you say, a tremendous journey, not just physically in space, but culturally and in many ways. I guess it's important for you, the idea of contributing and making a difference and supporting the society, the country where you grew up.
I'm a direct product of someone else's generosity. Like these individuals, I tend to say, they don't make them in this fabric anymore, really. It's really, really nice people who have absolutely no idea who I am, and out of a good heart and compassion, decide to support some kid, halfway around the world, they may or may never meet, and kind of invest their time, resources, and money to help me be somebody. So since I'm a product of someone else's generosity, it's apparent. Like, I have to be able to pay it forward in some one way or the other. I may never pay it forward the same way they did for me, because it's immeasurable, but I can try one person at a time to the best of my ability.
Well, it sounds like Rides for Lives is having quite an impact. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about the scale of what your activities today, but how difficult has it been? What have been a few of the big challenges for you to get this enterprise to where it is today?
Africa is rising. It's a very, very prime location for a lot of amazing things happening at the moment. But at the same time, we can't ignore the challenges facing, lack of access to all kinds of things, from capital to resources to all sorts of things to start any enterprise. For us, the biggest challenge for the most part has been the idea that the problem we're tackling is enormous. It's a large, large problem. And so we kind of get faced with this, continuously faced with this idea whereby you the resources far, far smaller than the need. So the need exceeds the resources tremendously. And that puts us in a position where we have to turn people down and, you know, not reach the scale we want to reach. And everything revolves and comes back to, you know, money. Because in order to get the right talent, you have to be able to pay them well to compete on the market. And in order to reach more people, you need to invest more resources. So it's a very challenging environment to work in. The other idea is the fact that because the people we're trying to reach are like the poorest of the poor at the bottom of the pyramid, it makes it really hard to even, you know, charge any fee to have anybody pay for any service. Even if you introduce like 50 cents to charge for any service, then that means you're cutting out almost 80% of the people you intended to serve.
Yeah.
Which is a big, big problem. But anyway, so it's just the market and the environment is challenging, but at the same time, that's not an excuse not to do anything. We just got to try our best.
Yeah. Absolutely. That sounds amazing. It's interesting you say, talk about the resource constraints and the heart of what you're doing and the huge demand for what you do. How do you measure what you can do at the moment?
There's multiple ways. One of our biggest kind of driving philosophy is the idea that, you know, there's so many people with great intentions. They come up with a solution. And they go to some developing country and you just like drop it off. Like, okay, you people need this. And as soon as they step the foot on the plane to head back home, the solution they brought breaks down and that's the end of it. And millions of dollars have fallen victim to this. So my philosophy is the thought that you need to create products locally by the locals and for the locals, whereby you have the locals be part and partial of the design process. So it's kind of designing a product for the people, but have them take part in the process to kind of inform you or participate in what they actually need. So with that in mind, most of our products are locally made. We kind of source the materials locally, and as a measure, answering your question, we look at the employment created. Africa is one of the youngest continent in terms of age demographics. So most people are really young, under 25. So there's a huge problem of unemployment. So we tackle that problem. And then the second problem, the second measure is the number of people served by our products. So we do the head count. And also with our M&E systems, we kind of determine or look at, you know, how many patients have been served who would rather have not if we were not around. If we looked at, we also look at the illnesses that are kind of prevalent in the area, like people doing HIV screenings and cancer screenings and malaria, and all that stuff. So kind of keep data on what we see in the field.
What are those measures, Chris?
We are looking at, so we have three products. The first product is a village ambulance, which is a kind of like a bed attached to a bicycle, a motorcycle that brings individuals from the villages to the hospitals to access healthcare. That's been going strong, and we've worked with a lot of, you know, global NGO partners from, you know, Red Cross to World Vision to, you know, Save the Children, UNICEF, and name it. And then the second product kind of was inspired by the idea that when we drop people off at the hospital, sometimes they have a hard time seeing a doctor because doctors are very hard to come around in most places. So I designed a mobile health unit, which is essentially a hospital on wheels. It's a doctor's room, a lab, and a pharmacy. So if you went there, you can get, you know, not only general consultation with the doctor on board, you can do your blood work and buy the medicine all in one unit. And it makes a circuit around market days, and every village in Africa has a market day, and there's a market day 7 days a week. So we are guaranteed clients and people coming through every single day. And then the third unit is a unit for persons with disabilities, which is a motorized wheelchair. But, you know, motorized wheelchairs for the developing countries, because most of the motorized wheelchairs made for the Western world does not work in the developing world settings. The ones that are made for like America or the UK or Australia, where the roads are paved and smooth, they're low to the ground, they just fall short in Africa or any other place. So we make sturdy products that can really take a beating. They can go in this heavy rain and scorching sun and take the potholes and still remain standing. But to date, we are looking at a population of slightly over 500,000 people that have been served with our products.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great. That's great. And your engineering skills obviously coming in handy.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if it wasn't the engineering, I'm probably not sure where I would be. It would be a totally different field or space, but not sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How have you funded this? I know how hard it is to raise money for any project, and particularly projects, as you say, where at the bottom of the pyramid, as they say, or, you know, you can't charge and so forth.
It is a challenge. It's been a challenge, but we've had tremendous support from individual donors and family foundations that have been supporting us. But it's an ongoing challenge. Like, my life literally mostly revolves around fundraising. And, you know, once I have money in the account, then that's when I go on the ground and build products and deploy them, and off I go on a plane. So it is a tough environment, but it's definitely been grant funded.
You spend a lot of time fundraising. What have you learned about fundraising? What insights have you got for other social entrepreneurs?
Fundraising is a tough game. I don't want to sugarcoat it. It's all about networking. You just gotta network. People fund people. However much amazing your organization is, or however much amazing your solution is, it doesn't matter if there's no that kind of human touch, human connection between you and the funders. And the other thing that I've learned is funders like to fund things that are successful. And that's because, you know, someone else has taken the risk out. They don't, you know, it's easier for them to come on board. So when you're starting out, it's a very, very rough environment, because if nobody knows who you are, you have to work, you know, blood, sweat, and tears to get in front of these individuals. Network.
Yes, yeah. It echoes what other social entrepreneurs I've spoken to have said about, persistence, and also the crucial importance of the pilot project, or the project which, you know, being able to show the impact and provide evidence of the success of your project.
Yep, absolutely. And what's even very interesting in the funding space is you'd hear and see people blasting on their platform saying, oh, we fund social entrepreneurs and we fund early stage companies and we really fund individuals, but we don't, but all of that, the buzzwords, when it comes to the actual reality, people are risk adverse and they will say they fund early entrepreneurs and early stage companies, but there's something called too early. Every time you apply for something and say, well, you're still too early, even though the person indicated clearly that they fund early stage companies. So you have to persist and keep pursuing it until you get to a certain point where you take the risk out for them as much as you can. And taking the risk is by investing a lot of time and removing the risk is kind of showing them the data, information, metrics, and things that I've been able to do on the ground, and then they get excited to come on board.
Yes, create some excitement.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting experience you're having there, because it's invaluable really for other social entrepreneurs as well to kind of learn from other experience. What about support mechanisms for social entrepreneurs on your journey? Have there been any organizations in particular that have provided you with support, or other organizations that you'd like to, at particular moments you'd like to have had support? Are there things that would have been particularly helpful?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The word is echoing green. I don't know if you've ever heard of this organization. Echoing Green is the ultimate social entrepreneur organization, literally. They say they fund people, not ideas. They mean it. They support you in all levels, from financing to support in all levels, from legal to business, but anything you would like that a social entrepreneur needs, you contact them. If they don't have the answers, they know someone who has an answer and they will make that introduction. I often say that there are so many entrepreneurs who, if asked today, if they would be doing what they were doing, what they're doing, if it wasn't for Echoing Green, there are very few who would be still there, because Echoing Green supports you for 2 years. And in those 2 years, you are welcome to ask and reach out for any sort of help. So that's been very, very helpful in my space. The other organization is Ashoka. I'm a new fellow in the Ashoka Network. I'm still learning and getting to experience and benefit from all the exciting things it has to offer. But for me, Echoing Green has been especially the most helpful tool to date.
Right. That's interesting. Again, it's something that both of those organizations have had great impact for other social entrepreneurs as well. Did you think about being a charity? What does it mean to you to be a social entrepreneur?
I think a social entrepreneur is a person who puts the needs of the other people far ahead and beyond the needs of themselves. And that involves lots and lots of sacrifices. You find yourself depleting your entire bank account and getting all the money out so that you can keep the organization afloat. It takes a certain kind to stick to this space, because there are so many places you could be making tons and tons of money in other forms of, startup business as an entrepreneur. But once you commit to this space, you are, it's driven by love and compassion.
It's something that your heart's got to be fully involved in the project, because as you say, it takes time and it takes a lot of your resources, your own personal resources, to make change happen.
Absolutely.
Social entrepreneurship is a changing area, really, isn't it? There are many kind of hybrid organizations now that work in various different ways.
Yeah, it's I have my own thoughts about that. Funders, you know, lots of people who have the money or extra income to donate to some social enterprise have been very, very successful. Individuals have started businesses themselves, but mostly on the for-profit side and kind of benefiting from the whole idea of capitalism. And then they, when they are contributing money to some organization, they come with that mindset, trying to commercialize every organization in the process, which makes it super hard, especially for people who are serving people at the bottom of the pyramid who cannot pay a penny, but they are the ones who need the service. So it's a very tough environment at the moment because every social enterprise is expected to have you know, huge business plan and how much money they're going to make and all that stuff. And it kind of really defeats the whole idea of the people you are trying to serve. And you end up serving people who are already have something because if they can pay, they're somewhat okay. But anyways, I think it's a very tricky environment at the moment because every social enterprise, every nonprofit, they're trying to commercialize it in a way.
It's interesting you say that. There's a lot of pressure for social change organizations to be sustainable. It's difficult, as you say, because there are clearly some circumstances where it's just inconceivable to even consider charging for the service. And yet, if one, in other contexts, if one was able to make some contribution towards your costs, you would certainly increase substantially the sustainability of the organization.
Yep, you hit the nail on the head right there. It's the idea that, you know, the sustainability pressure and then creates the idea where you have to turn a social enterprise into a commercial enterprise of some kind, and then you end up serving a certain privileged individuals while you're making this money, and then you cut out the individuals you intended to serve in the first place. And yet, if you really wanted to make a lot of money, there are other ways to actually do that. Just start another for-profit business and just go all hard in the capitalism sense and make the money, you know. So it's a very tricky environment, and I'm kind of conflicted. And as you can tell, I have really, you know, interesting thoughts about that.
Do you see this as an issue in the whole sector? Is this on the minds of other social entrepreneurs, do you think, when you go to meetings or when you see other social entrepreneurs? Is this an important theme?
It is an important theme. It's just that because social entrepreneurship is a buzzword at the moment, then every person who makes money calls themselves a social enterprise, and the actual social enterprises are dying out. And that's why it really makes me mad. The real social enterprises that care about individuals are dying out because they can't stand this pressure, and funders are not giving them enough resources or money because it's not sustainable, quote unquote. And the ones that come up with like, oh, I made this much money serving this many people and all that stuff, because they can splash it on the wall and in these fancy PowerPoints, they get all the money. And the real enterprises are, you know, kind of in the trenches dying. So, yeah.
Is this something you see on the ground? Have you seen this firsthand, that organizations with worthy goals that are making a real impact on the ground are struggling and some closing down?
Speaking from experience, absolutely. There are so many people who are struggling with really good intentions, very wonderful organizations, making huge difference in the world, but they are not as financially sustainable as the people with the money would like to see it, and it's happening in most places. Yeah,
there's a lot of talk also about scale, isn't there? Scalable organizations.
I mean, scale needs money. So any organization that's doing worthwhile work, if they get the money, they can scale it. It's all about duplicating what you've already worked on, and it's successful. But the scale that we're talking about goes back to that idea that, you know, you can make a ton of money here, and then once you make a ton of money here, you use that money to multiply what you've created, which is very unrealistic, especially if you're not in this for the money, you know.
Sure. It's a tricky one, isn't it? It's a challenging topic.
It is a very challenging, and I understand where the individual's minds are coming from. And I don't want to come off as like this pissed off dude. It's just that not everything is made to make money. That's what I want to put across.
Yeah. I mean, some people I've interviewed, somebody talks about no margin, no mission. Some organizations try and provide some services to maybe a different segment of the market or a different niche or something like that, and try and use some funds from that to fund some of the, you know, more needing areas where people have, you know, no money at all. But I think it becomes quite complex doing that in terms of trying to run different kinds of organizations.
You're running two organizations, not one. So it's like this whole like sexy one-for-one model that's been going around, and people creating millions of dollars for themselves at some point from this idea that, you know, it's wonderful, they're making money here and they're donating it over here. It's sexy from the books and papers.
I suppose if you can actually do that, I mean, I spoke to somebody called Jane Chen, and she has a low-cost baby incubator, and they have a for-profit and a not-for-profit arm, and, you know, they are, you know, having great results. Also, they needed that structure for funding because, you know, they couldn't fund with a non-profit structure, so they needed, you know, to have that as well. But it undoubtedly adds to the complexity of the organization and in an already challenging environment.
Yeah, and I mean, if you have a product that can make money, you incorporate it as a for profit, and you get an investor to come on board and give you money as an investment, and expect it returns on the investment. Trust me, they actually want you to focus, you know, 112% of your time on building the money making side of things, because they want their returns back, as opposed to focusing energy on trying to help people on the nonprofit side. So it becomes a really imbalanced. There are some people who have been very successful, don't get me wrong, but it's a very challenging environment.
What's your vision, Chris, for, you know, the next few years for Rides for Lives?
For me, the products we've created and can be adopted and conserve populations anywhere in the world, even here in America. If you come to think about it, there are millions of people who cannot go to the hospital or the doctor for one reason or another, and they could use our mobile health unit or anywhere in Europe. But I'm more on the one person can make a difference, just one person at a time. My vision is to look at Rides for Lives and see in about 20, 30 years from now, we've reached most developing countries from Asia to South America to, most of the African continent. And it's going to grow organically and slow. So just keep the fire burning, as I like to say.
Great ambition, Chris, and I wish you the very best of success and the very best of good fortune with this great project of yours.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for taking the time to speak to inspiring social entrepreneurs today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to the Inspiring Social Entrepreneur podcast. I hope you found this interview inspiring. Please make sure to visit www.inspiringsocialentrepreneurs.com and subscribe to make sure you don't miss any future podcasts.